Our Lady of Paris was presented by Simon Russell Beale, and the producer was Catherine Longworth. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 on FM. We're on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news read by David Cornett.
Ministers in Cyprus say they're considering imposing a tax on bank deposits which are greater than €100,000. The island's finance minister said significant progress has been made in talks between the government and officials from the European Union, the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Treacherous weather conditions are continuing to cause disruption across much of the UK. Heavy snow and high winds have left flights cancelled and roads closed. Sporting events have been cancelled and 35,000 households in Northern Ireland are still without power. More than 10,000 in Scotland are also affected. Police in Northern Ireland say a viable explosive device has been found in a car which was left in Enniskillen yesterday morning. Officers said it was lucky that no one was killed or injured because of what they called a reckless act. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has arrived in Birmingham for his party's spring conference, where he's set to accuse the coalition of consigning Britain to a decade of decline by sticking to its economic strategy. But he'll warn that Labour can't take people's support for granted, despite what he'll describe as a discredited, divided and damaging government. The UK Independence Party is also holding its spring gathering in Exeter. Its leader, Nigel Farage, said coming second in the recent Eastleigh by-election demonstrated an appeal to voters across the spectrum. In Inverness, Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, will tell activists that the country would be better off economically if it were independent. The Disasters Emergency Committee says people in the UK have donated nearly £3.5 million to its Syria crisis appeal since it was launched on Thursday. The money will be distributed between 14 UK charities which are helping people in Syria and in neighbouring countries. And the weather, there are warnings of further snow in central and eastern England, with most of the UK feeling very cold with icy winds. It'll be mild with some sunshine in the southwest. Jolly good for them. BBC News and weather at 1:02.
And it was read by David Cornett. Well, time now on Radio 3 for the Early Music Show. Today, as part of Radio 3's Baroque Spring, Catherine Bott heads for Eastern Europe in search of some rarely heard musical gems.
Hello. Today I'm looking at the work of some Baroque composers whose names are less familiar than those usual suspects. Bach, Handel, Vivaldi, Telemann, the Scarlattis, Corelli, Rameau, Purcell. Why not join me on a journey into the heart of Eastern Europe for some stimulatingly unusual musical colours and textures, starting in Poland.
Thank you.
The first of several examples in today's programme of a magnificent and rarely heard side to the Baroque. That was the motet Triumphalis Dies by an important early figure in Polish Baroque music, Marcin Milczewski, performed by the Ensemble Européen William Byrd and their director Graham O'Reilly. Before we go too much further afield, a timely reminder of one of J.S. Bach's gifted musical predecessors, Philipp Heinrich Erlebach. Next year we'll see the 300th anniversary of Erlebach's death. He spent his life in the service of the court at Rudolstadt in Thuringia, Germany, not far from the border with what is now the Czech Republic. He was director of music, teacher and composer. The records there prove that he wrote around 750 works. Sadly, only a few now remain after a fire destroyed most of them. Here's a cantata for Easter Sunday. Radiant, buoyant, almost dance-like. Held, du hast den Feind gebunden. Hero, you have bound the foe.
Schmacht. Herrlich bist verklärt worden, dir, O Jesus. des Kreuzes Sünde tragen und in deinen Wegen gehen, werd ich doch nach solchen Klagen schöner und herrlich, schöner und herrlich auferstehen.
Cantata for Easter Sunday by Philipp Heinrich Erlebach, performed by Ludger Remy and Les Amis de Philippe. Heading east from Erlebach's Thuringia, our first stop is back in Poland, where there was a vibrant musical scene in the 17th century, which continues to resonate down the years courtesy of the 16. Eamon Dugan, their associate conductor, spoke to us last week about their new CD of music by Bartłomiej Pękiel, who played a unique role in Polish music. Eamon began by telling us how it all started.
Autumn 1595, the Polish king, King Zygmunt III, sent envoys to Rome, to the Eternal City, to hire church musicians to come back to his court and establish a musical scene in the style of the great European centres. he managed to hire Annibale Stabile and 16 other musicians who left to come to his court. And the most important thing about this is that around 1649, Marco Scacchi left Poland and his vice maestro di cappella, one Bartłomiej Pękiel, took over the reins. And he was the first non-Italian maestro di cappella at the Polish court. The first thing that really caught my attention about Pękiel's music is the huge variety of styles that he writes in. He writes big concertato masses, so we're talking polychoral masses with instruments. We have intensely emotional and emotive devotional motets, very much in the style of Monteverdi, with extreme use of dissonance, very, very expressive. And then most interestingly, in the later stages of his career, he goes back to writing in a Renaissance polyphonic style, very much in the style of Palestrina, but in a topsy-turvy way. It's later on in his career rather than the more stile moderno that he was writing on in the earlier stages. I see Pękiel as being a studious character, proud of his learning, I think, well steeped in tradition, and someone who had made great study of the people who'd gone before him. I think what he manages to do is take the styles that were prevalent at the time. So we're talking about people writing in the stile moderno, the beginning of the 17th century. He manages to put his own stamp on it, though. I think this is what stands out for me. It's Italianate in its style, but there are thumbprints on it that I think would be described as recognisably Polish once you get to know the music. Particularly at big cadential moments, he doesn't necessarily do what you expect. And I think when we were first looking at this music and exploring it, these moments sounded a little bit strange, but the more we immersed ourselves in the music, the more I came to understand that this is just his thumbprint. So the first piece that we're going to listen to is the Gloria from his Missa a 14. This is a polychoral work. So we have two choirs, SATB, and an instrumental accompaniment, in this case, two violins, three viols, and a continuous section of harp, theorbo, and organ.
Thank you.
The Gloria from the Mass for 14 Voices by Bartłomiej Pękiel, performed by the 16, conducted by Eamon Dugan. And there'll be more from them later. Turning south from Poland, our tour of Eastern Europe takes us next to what is now the Czech Republic, and to a village southeast of Prague, where a young composer cut his teeth writing the music for a school play. Jan Dismas Zelenka was 5 years old when Handel and Bach were born, and in 1704 the world first heard his music, accompanying a school drama in a Jesuit college. Zelenka's own education took him first to Prague and then to Dresden, where he soon picked up work as a violinist. And by 1712 there are accounts of study trips to France and Italy, where this boy from the Bohemian backwoods soaked up the latest musical ideas like a sponge. Here's the opening of one of the capriccios Zelenka wrote when he returned to Vienna in around 1717, possibly for his teacher, Johann Joseph Fuchs, whom we'll hear from later. The music seems to thrive on optimism and exuberance, and certainly demands a who dares wins sort of horn player. For this recording, Camerata Bern were fortunate to be able to call on the services of Barry Tuckwell.
Thank you.
Music written by a Czech living in Vienna after a recent visit to Italy. The opening of Zelenka's Capriccio No. 1 in D major, played by Camerata Bern and high wire horn player Barry Tuckwell. That music came from around 1717. To put the year in context by mentioning a couple of Baroque stars, that was when Handel went to Canons to work for the Duke of Chandos, and Bach started working as Kapellmeister in Curtin. In other words, a time when the musical Baroque was fast approaching its high tide. But that tide had started to flow at least 100 years earlier and had washed over seismic events in Europe, the 30 Years' War among them. But what did the earliest Eastern European Baroque music sound like? Here are two examples by Isaac Posch, born in the last quarter of the 16th century, probably in Austria. His life's journey took him to Slovenia, where he became invaluable to the prince-bishops of what is now Ljubljana. He was kept busy repairing musical instruments, building organs, and composing. Here's an intrada for organ, and then Bonum est confiteri domino from Harmonia Concertans, the collection of settings Posch made from the Song of Songs.
Thank you.
the music of Isaac Posch, Bonum est Confiteri Domino, from Harmonia Concertans, his collection of sacred songs published in 1623, performed by Salzburger Hofmusik and their director Wolfgang Brunner. And before that, an Intrada for organ, played by Florian Pagic on the organ of Wittering Abbey, Klagenfurt, in southern Austria. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and today I'm looking at how the Baroque revolution in music spread across Eastern Europe, away from those old familiar characters like Bach, Handel and Vivaldi. For instance, here's another name from the early years of the Baroque that's not quite as widely mentioned as each of those last three, Zacharias Zarevutius. He's one of those people whose nationality seems to vary depending on whom you ask. The CD we're about to hear quite definitely claims him as Hungarian, but then Grove's Dictionary says, with typically resonant authority, Slovak composer and organist. In about 1623, in his late teens, Zarevutius took up the post in which he would stay until the end of his life as organist at the Lutheran church at Bardejov in Slovakia or Bartfe in northern Hungary. Take your pick. What's clear is that this small and beautiful town, now a World Heritage Site, was lucky to have engaged such an able musician. Only 18 of Zarevutius's works survive in manuscripts kept by the church in Bardejov, one of them being this Magnificat.
Thank you.
The Magnificat Primi Toni by Zacharias Zarvutius, performed by Camerata Bratislava, conducted by Jan Rosenau. Some Baroque composers educated themselves through travel, the exhilaration of discovering new sounds in new places, while others journeyed to seek out distinguished teachers. One of the latter was Johann Joseph Fuchs, born in Austria in 1660. He arrived in Vienna around 1690, and worked for a series of very distinguished patrons, beginning with Emperor Leopold I. His great legacy was one of the most astonishing musical textbooks of all time, Gradus ad Parnassum. Studied closely in later years by Haydn, Beethoven and Mozart, this was a book that allowed new chapters of musical history to begin. Here's music by Fuchs that shows why he was such a hit with the Viennese nobility. A rondo that's charming, elegant, but also homely, gemütlich.
Thank you.
A rondo by Johann Josef Fuchs, performed by the Freiburg Baroque Orchestra, directed by Gottfried von der Goltz. We began today's musical journey around the Eastern European Baroque in Poland, so now we'll return there. The 16 and their associate conductor, Eamon Dugan, are about to release a CD of Bartłomiej Pękiel's music. And last week, Eamon told us why.
There's a huge amount of research being done by Polish musicologists at the moment, and they're unearthing stacks and stacks of this music, which just hasn't really been in the public arena before. And it's very exciting for us to be at the forefront of this. We were approached by a Polish foundation, the Instytut Adama Mickiewicza, who presented us with a pile of scores of works by Pękiel and Zieleński. And Harry Christopher's and myself had a look at them and realised that there were some great pieces here which hadn't really been explored before. And Harry thought this would be a great project for me to cut my teeth on. So he very kindly handed it over to me. When listening to Pękiel's music for the first time, one can discern a wide variety of influences. It's fascinating to wonder what he was seeing, what published sources were coming across his desk, as it were. And I think from that we can see that the influence of this Baroque style of writing was very, very broad, and the dissemination of this style was really reaching further than, you know, we might perceive. Pękiel, throughout his career, covered a huge variety of styles. We're going to hear now a segment from his motet, devotional motet, Dulcis Amor Jesu, where we have just five solo voices with two continuo instruments of theorbo and harp. It's very, very expressive writing. He uses dissonance in a very emotive fashion. The text is very over the top, pious text. And then we're going to contrast this with the motet O Adoranda Trinitas, which looks backwards, although we think it was written later on in his career. It's scored for alto, two tenors and bass, a cappella, and this would certainly have been written for the Rurantist ensemble at Wawel Cathedral, where he worked in the later stages of his career. But it's interesting that at this stage, later on, he returned to writing in the stile antico, very much in Renaissance polyphonic style, in the style of Palestrina. What's interesting about Pękiel is that if he wants to emphasise a particular word or phrase, then he'll go to homophonic writing at that point. So that's all voices moving in the same rhythm at the same time. So at the moment where the prayer turns to the personal, protect your whole people, save them, free them, rescue and heal them, he suddenly sets that in homophonic writing. So there's a real moment of emphasis to bring this plea across. And when we return to the praise of the Trinity, he goes back to the polyphonic writing.
Thank you.
Dulcis Amor and Adoranta Trinitas by Bartłomiej Pękiel, performed by The 16, directed by Eamon Dugan. And that's it for today. If you have been, thanks for listening. Tune in again next time to see where our travels take us on the Early Music Show.
And that was Catherine Bott. Today's Early Music Show was produced by Lyndon Jones. And just to say, you can download a podcast version of that edition from the Early Music Show pages of the Radio 3 website. In tomorrow's programme at the same time, Lucy Skeeping visits the Baroque Theatre of Český Krumlov in the Czech Republic, where she's given a guided tour by theatre historian Ian McIntosh. Built in 1766 to celebrate the wedding of Prince Adam von Schwarzenberg, the theatre is arguably the best preserved Baroque theatre space in Europe. That's tomorrow lunchtime at 1 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3. And later on tomorrow afternoon,
BBC Radio 3's Baroque Spring continues with Bach's St. Matthew Passion in a live Palm Sunday performance from Krakow. Andrew Parrott conducts the work as he believes it would have been performed in Bach's time, with a small orchestra and just a few singers taking all the solo and chorus parts. Live from the Philharmonic Hall in Krakow, Bach's St. Matthew Passion. Tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's just came up to 1 minute past two. And time now for another chance to hear a concert first broadcast live from London's Wigmore Hall last Monday lunchtime. The presenter once again is Catherine Bott.
A warm welcome on a chilly day to Wigmore Hall, where in a few moments the St. Lawrence String Quartet will be invigorating us with works by Haydn and Beethoven. The quartet has been firmly established as a world-class foursome ever since winning the Banff International String Quartet competition in 1992. As well as playing the traditional quartet repertoire, they regularly perform the work of living composers, and last night they gave the UK premiere of a new work by Oswaldo Golijov here at Wigmore Hall. They are, they say, passionate educators. And since 1998, they've been ensemble in residence at Stanford University in California. The St. Lawrence String Quartet are going to begin today's live Radio 3 lunchtime recital with Haydn's Quartet in D, the second of six in his Opus 71, written in 1793. The set is dedicated to Count Apponyi, an influential member of Viennese Musical Society. But Haydn hadn't long been back from his first extended trip to London, where he'd found the orchestral playing to be rather more accomplished and inspiring than his own modest setup in Esterhazy. The person he probably had in mind as he wrote these quartets was actually the London impresario Johann Peter Salomon, who had created so many opportunities for him. And Haydn had brought back another idea from London. The quartet we're going to hear now, and its five siblings, were his first chamber pieces to be conceived specifically for public performance to a paying audience in a concert hall. Accordingly, he made the set more extrovert and expansive with bigger gestures. So, a quartet inspired by London musical life gets an airing in a London concert hall. The Wigmore wasn't built until a long time after Haydn's visits, of course, but surely he'd have loved his music to have been played here. Now, to play his quartet in D, Opus 71, number 2, we welcome the St. Lawrence String Quartet.